And if I mess up, first off, I figure out what I did, make amends, and then attempt to do everything I can to not do that again, right? Plain and simple. That's with anything in my life. And that's the type of stuff that we like to talk about and teach when we're working with peers directly within Project Rebirth, is mm-hmm. to talk about those issues, most especially in a trauma-informed manner, mm-hmm. which helps us to being veterans or first responders that are the peers itself. So it's usually easier for everyone to open up and discuss those types of issues and barriers that we may have acquired over the years. I get to do some of the best work with, honestly, with most of the people that we're working with are struggling the most. That's where I feel like real reward and I'm honored. That's what it is. I feel honored to be able to do the work that I do.
Stories are powerful. Powerful.
Welcome to the Rise, Recover, Live podcast, brought to you by The Phoenix. This is a space where people impacted by substance use can come to share their story of strength and resilience, get open and honest, and inspire hope and build community through shared experience.
We'll be talking to people in our community on their own recovery journey and shine a light on the topic of recovery in all its forms. Maybe you'll hear some of your story in theirs.
Let's show the world that together we rise, recover, and live.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Rise, Recover, Live podcast. I am your host today, Liz McKean. My pronouns are she, her, and I am without Bryce the Third today, just Liz and our wonderful guest, and we miss you very much, Bryce, if you're listening, but we plan to make you proud. And I'm really excited for you to meet this guest today. We've been talking about this for a little while, and actually he's been shouted out, or his organization has been shouted out in several, at least one, I think possibly two podcasts that we've done recently for the work that he's doing with the Phoenix and with veterans. And I'm going to just start out by reading this bio that, as I said to him earlier today, is just blowing my little mind because I knew he was a big deal and did a lot of really incredible things, but I did not know the depth of it, and you need to know too. So today we have Brian Sims, CRPSV, BSR, and CEI. Brian is the founder and national director of Project Rebirth, again, this organization that's doing incredible things with the Phoenix. He is Army Infantry veteran and emergency manager. Brian is a person in long-term recovery from substance misuse, MST, and co-occurring disorders acquired while serving his country during the campaigns and operations in support of the global war on terrorism as a U.S. Army infantryman. He is also a suicide attempt and street-level homelessness survivor. Mr. Sims has held director-level positions and board seats in multiple veteran-focused nonprofits, establishing programs and training for over 30,000 volunteers. He is also a FEMA-certified emergency management professional and has deployed at the request of the U.S. government to work with state and local governments to rescue citizens and save lives and property over a dozen times, including during the global COVID pandemic. In 2016, Brian established and implemented a similar veteran recovery program for Fellowship RCO in Broward County, Florida, becoming a main contact and consultant for multiple Broward County law enforcement agencies for veteran crisis intervention and training. He is a certified recovery peer specialist veteran for the Florida Certification Board, a veteran-supported recovery professional peer for the New York State Certification Board, and a NADAC certified event interventionist. He also holds training certifications for dozens of accredited courses, including ASSIST, RAP, Mental Health First Aid, CASAT, First Responder Trainings, thank you, Psych Armor, IAFF Peer Trainings, Trauma Informed Recovery Coaching, and more. Brian is also the incoming service officer for American Legion Post 19 in Orlando, Florida. And he's also very kind to step in and help when I'm panicking because I know I'm going to say a word wrong. So, Brian, welcome. You are amazing. I feel like we could just like stop right there and everyone would be like applause and goosebumps all over the place. So thank you for all you do and for who you are.
Thank you for attending our session. Yeah. Yes. Yes. Thank you, Liz. And so that's it, right? The end,
we did
end
it.
Of story. We're yeah, good to
exactly.
go.
What a great conversation, I tell you. No, well, thank you for being here. And I mean, clearly you're a busy guy and have been for a long time. And like others that we've spoken to on this podcast, you're a person who goes through some crap and then reaches back and just dedicated your life to supporting folks who are and have gone through similar crap, to say it as eloquently as I just did. So yeah. So thank you for coming. I feel like there's so many places we could start. I guess I would just love to start by having hear you introduce yourself. Like, what's your, if we were just meeting on the street, what might you say?
I'm just a dude playing another dude disguised as another dude. All my veterans that are in the audience will definitely get that, but I'm sure a lot of other people, including you, Liz, which I really love that line. And it's true. Like, sometimes people do ask me that question, like on the streets, or for instance, like at a networking thing or at a conference, you know. And I say that, number one, it's great because usually we're all laughing about it. But two, it kind of is accurate for those of us that are walking pathways of recovery. That's kind of how our lives were, right? Like, we're just acting like someone else, acting like someone else so that we could kind of get by. And even in recovery today, I think some of us can use that sometimes to our detriment, but also it can be an asset, right? That kind of acting as if type thing. So yeah, that would be what I would say off the bat. But Project Rebirth is my current thing. I've been doing it for a couple years. Do you want me to kind of do history of that type of thing?
Yeah. Or? Yeah. And actually, before you even go into that, I just to give a little history of like how Project Rebirth and the Phoenix are kind of connected right now for folks who are like, I've heard enough. How do I want to get involved? On our app, we have some partners right now who have been kind enough to create a space for their communities and to allow their communities to grow within that Phoenix app, and then also offer events that they are running totally independently of the Phoenix, but that people can now discover through the app. So I'm really excited to have these events on our app for veterans and first responders to have spaces that they can connect where recovery is a topic, but that shared experience is, you know, always top of mind. So with that being said, yeah, please tell us more. Tell us all about this incredible organization that you are just making happen.
Project Rebirth is the first warrior recovery community organization. So it's the first RCO that is dedicated to mostly serving veterans and emergency responders. We do serve family members and other loved ones. Typically, like when I'm doing the elevator pitch, this is a little more expanded. I do just say loved ones, and I make it clear because any of our, like my veteran brothers and sisters and they that may be listening to this will know the word dependent. So dependent is like the technical term for like your family members. And those family members, dependents, are the ones that actually get access to your benefits. There are plenty of people in our population, within our community, I should say, that are not legally partnered, or they may have a stepchild that's not legally adopted, and therefore those services and benefits may not extend to them directly, though they may be within that household directly. So Project Rebirth came about. I'd come back from Orlando down to Miami for a little bit. I was walking a pathway of recovery down there and spending time with family because I didn't spend time with them for a little while through the pandemic and such. I had heard that there was an RCO that had started in Miami, Florida. My pathway of recovery, just so everyone understands, is an abstinence-based 12-step pathway. So I was at one of my 12-step meetings and I heard someone speak and she worked for this RCO. And I was like, hey, I used to work for an RCO in Broward, which is Fellowship RCO. They helped save my life, plain and simple. And we work very closely together. But so plug for everyone at Fellowship
Shout out
RCO.
To Fellowship.
Yes. So I was like, hey, can I lend any type of experience or advice? Because we were kind of new back then too. I mean, we had a brick and mortar RCO and it was running, but really like we really hadn't got like state funding yet or, you know, anything from SAMHSA or, you know, we were just kind of out there doing it, right? I got a meeting set with the founder of Miami Recovery Project. He had asked me when I came in, I literally brought in a PowerPoint presentation about like a whole bunch of information about RCOs. It was old stuff that I had like in my Google Drive from when I worked at Fellowship. I was like, here, this is everything that I know. If you can use this, take it. And like he and everyone else like sat there looking at me like, where did you come from? I was like, hi. And the next question was, so do you want to make a veteran program for us? And my answer was no, absolutely not. No, that is not what I came here to do. That is not what I want to do. I'm going to like go back to Orlando in a little while and that's that. But like any good, at least person that is a 12-step program, I went to like sponsors and my network and all that stuff. And I was like, hey, what do you think about this? What should I do? And I kind of prayed on and meditated on it. And the answer was, well, make them something, give it to them. And then you can, as we say in the military, pop smoke and get out of there. Right. So I did that, but I didn't leave. It ended up that that executive director ended up needing to leave the organization. And I was given the position of executive director at Miami Recovery Project. We had already
Rebirth. A little because we went from here's my stuff. I got to go. I don't know. Should I get involved? And then the very next part of the story is, and now I'm the executive director.
Right, exactly, we don't do moderation, it works. That's the truth, right? Like, yeah. So there's that, right? Like, I don't do moderation well. Mm-hmm. I do it okay. I think that's a struggle for all of us in anything in life. So I don't do that as well as I could. But you know, the big reason behind that is I truly am a person of service, both supported by my experiences out of recovery, experiences in recovery, and then my experiences as a military veteran, plus the way that I was mm-hmm. raised. So even though I went and said no, it did end up being no. And then I kind of got sucked in deeper, which was not a plan. I mean, this was kind of a spontaneous thing that happened. And the board asked, and I said, okay, I'll do it. I did give them a hard time frame. I said I wouldn't do it past a certain time frame, and do not offer me the full position. I'll be your interim, which is exactly what happened. We were able to find another executive director who ended up being my mom. So my mom is the executive director of Miami Recovery Project, Natalie Sims. She is also a person in long-term recovery, over 20 years of recovery herself. She is also a licensed mental health clinician. She worked with like foster kids and such for the majority of her career as a therapist. And she's kicking butt down there with all our peer specialists at Miami Recovery Project. I probably get way too many phone calls. I can't say no to my mom. Okay. So there's where my boundary like disappears. Like she calls, I'm like, yes, what can I do? The point was, is I was like, listen, I the Project Rebirth thing, I had already had like 6 or 7 affiliates by the time that happened. That was of January of this year. I wanted to get back to building up this Project Rebirth thing again with the intention that I was going to hand it off to someone else and they would take it. So Project Rebirth at that time was a network of programs that was operating and is operating in recovery community organizations across the U.S. So as of right now, we took the advice of our board of advisors at that time from the programming, and we did create our own nonprofit. So Project Rebirth is independent now. Miami Recovery Project was like the program and fiscal agent, fiscal sponsor at that time. So we did kind of move out from underneath their umbrella, fully independent. We are a member of ARCO with Faces and Voices. We're real big on, you know, the entire network. And that's kind of the whole deal about Project Rebirth is that it is a program that operates in RCOs across the country. There's 18 individual programs. 12 of those are in the state of Florida, but we're also in California, Texas, Colorado, which I'm going to be in Colorado Springs at our Serenity Recovery Connection affiliate this coming Friday doing our training, which I'll talk about in a little bit. We're also in Michigan, Georgia, North Carolina. I think I got them all, but we've got some in Minnesota coming on. We're working with the state of New York to bring some on there. There's so many RCOs across the country. I mean, I think there's over 300 now.
Wow.
And we have kind of expanded a little further beyond just RCOs. Really, we did that with our headquarters. So I did return to Orlando. I'm in Orlando, Florida now. And we partnered with a hotel that's a 5-story, 145-room hotel. And we have worked with them to turn it into an all-veteran housing facility. And that is where our headquarters is. We provide on-site peer supportive services and care coordination direct to mainly homeless veterans, but most especially the homeless veterans that are they're having trouble navigating both mental health and or a substance misuse issue. So we provide that additional support and coordinate them with other organizations, which is what RCOs and peer specialists at RCOs do every single day. And then we support all of our individual programs across the nation with technical assistance, training, like I was saying, Walking with Warriors training, which is a 6EU NADAC accredited training. We bring in people from all the, like within their community, bring all those stakeholders into the training and let them talk about what it is that they have going on as well. So it almost works as a networking resource fair in a way too. It's a pretty innovative training. It's not like most trainings where it's very high level. We give tools and techniques of how to actually work with veterans and first responders within our given systems of care, because there are separate systems, for instance, the VA. And, you know, overall, I'm a big data nerd. I think that like facts, figures, empirical data is extremely important. Coming like from the military and as an emergency manager, like I need as much intel as I can get to be able to make effective decisions as a leader, right? So like I'm big on data. So I think it's important for everyone to understand that on the overdose crisis that we have, you know, because it goes beyond just opiates and addiction in general, like just on the overdose side, veterans since 2010 have been more than twice as likely to die of a overdose than the general US population. So it's been hitting us real hard, and we'll get into like suicidality numbers and stuff like that and how all that correlates later. But I did want to throw that in there because these are the types of things that we have been seeing when it comes to losing, you know, our friends, family, brothers and sisters. You know, we all share that. That's another big thing. We talk about at Project Rebirth, especially with like our veterans. There's a lot of veterans that are like, I only want to work with another veteran. And that's understandable. I get that. But civilians, you guys are experts at stuff too, right? And every single human being shares some stuff in common, that being grief and pain, right? So we all may enter into that room of grief and pain and trauma through a different door, sometimes a window. but at the end of the day, like we can all share that, right? So we always try to get non-veteran focused organizations understanding how they can work with us. And that's the spirit of Project Rebirth with RCOs, is getting them into this network of Project Rebirth programming so that they understand that one, we'll train you how to do this. And two, when you have issues, because it could be, you know, scary sometimes, honestly, to try and navigate some of the stuff, you can call headquarters at any time and we'll get on the phone or Zoom, or even if we're around, we'll come out to you and we'll give you the help that you need to help your peers navigate what they're doing.
It's incredible. It's just so like person first, you know, I mean, it's, I feel like, which sounds like a, well, duh, but I feel like it's not, you know, so many of these kinds of things are not, they're very, you know, like numbers focused, but like almost at the expense of like the individual people. Like rarely is there a call this number and talk, and a person will be there who knows how to help and, you know, wants to help and, you know, potentially has had that same experience. I'm wondering, so I know just from your bio and from our conversations, like that you know, you are a person in recovery, which I'm assuming means you are someone who struggled, you know, with substances. Actually, I don't do assume because that's in your bio as well, that you also, you know, our suicide survivor, I think was in there as well. And like, these are things, and, you know, veteran, there are things that you've experienced that are really specific. And, you know, the folks that you're helping, many experience that too. But like you said, a lot of people have experienced those things and not everyone has the drive and the dedication to make that their everything. Like what is it? Why? Like, why is this, why, as opposed to just being like, all right, I'm better now, let me move on and close that chapter, close that door. What is it that makes you continue to keep showing up?
Well, again, it was kind of like what I was talking about before, that spirit of service. You know, I was talking about this with another veteran, an older veteran, Vietnam veteran. In fact, he's a Marine. And he said to me, you got that guilt thing going on, don't you? Right. And I laughed because he was being serious, but he was also saying it in jest. But I laughed at him. I said, you know, the truth is sure, there's a little bit of that. you know, over the past, let's call it 15 years, right? First off, like I'm not a, as we would say in the 12-step programs, like I'm not a white chip wonder. I've had bouts of long-term recovery and handed that back all over again. I've tried many, many different ways, but I've been to a lot of treatment programs and like PTSD programs, dual diagnosis programs. I've had a lot of therapy, individual therapy. I've done just about every type of modality of treatment that there is for real. And I will say like, I used to have a whole survivor's guilt thing going on. I have not, I would say, struggled with that for maybe the past 5 or 6 years. I feel like I've really moved past that. But in moving past that, that I think is where the drive comes from, in the understanding of, it kind of boils down to one thing. And I almost, I even feel a little egotistical saying this, but it is what it is. If not me, then who? Like, if I didn't have the training and the experience and the education that I have, for me not to utilize that to help others, I feel like I'd be a failure. Like, I feel like that is the biggest crime that I could commit. And I've committed a lot of crimes. Most of them I've never gotten caught for, thank God. But the point is that
we'll do a follow-up podcast. I'm interested to hear.
Yeah, I know, right? We'll do the justice involved portion later, which I do have that experience. But that's kind of the main driving thing behind me. And I think that there is an element in my spirituality of like, this is like a God / universe type thing, also making things happen. Because I know a lot of people who are well equipped or could be better equipped to do this type of work, but they're already doing something else, maybe in the private sector or whatever, right? Or the, you know, because they do so much other stuff and they have family to worry about, like the ability to do this type of work for truly less pay than you would somewhere else. Also, you know, the occupational burnout factor within the peer profession is extremely high. I'm going to say some controversial stuff right now. It is what it is. Not everyone is built to do peer specialist work. It's just not, right? It takes, it also takes, like, in combination with that, it takes having a good supervisor to train you how to do this thing, because there's no like master's degree for this. There's no bachelor's degree for this, right? Like, you do a 40-hour training, you know, you get some extra trainings, and then it's like your feet in the fire, right? And and a lot of places it can be difficult to find someone who has experience to bring you through those things. And I happen to just, I think all those pieces fell into place for me over the past like 15 years that resulted in the opportunity to start this thing. And now we're at where we're at.
Yeah. You know, and I don't think that's egotistical at all. And I mean, if that's controversial, I think we're in our echo chamber, because I'm like, I agree with you that not everyone, you know, should be a peer support. I mean, I think we can all support our peers. You know, there's absolutely support that we can all give to each other in this world. But yeah, as a job, I, you know, what you said about the whole piece, I don't remember the language you used, but like, you know, just the concept of redemption, like knowing that like you did a lot of bad stuff, you know, a lot of things that you sure maybe wish you hadn't done or wouldn't have do again if you had the choice now. But also you know that the person that you are now is this good person who's doing good work, and you know your purpose, and you're not doing it out of guilt. You're not, you know, operating from a place of shame. And I think that is a critical piece of being good at this, because so many of us, I think, start off service. I can speak for myself, and I know I certainly still have areas of this that I need to work on, where it's like, you know, am I redeemable? Like, will I ever be able to do enough to make up for the hurt that I caused? Like, I, you know, I don't know. And that's not for me to choose. But also, if that is the only reason I'm doing stuff to make up for my bad things, and I truly don't maybe think that I'm forgivable, then what kind of message am I, on purpose or not, giving to the people that I'm supporting? You know, because you got to believe that we all have that good. We got to believe that we all have, you know, that redemption is possible, because, you know, not glass houses, man. We're all living in them.
100%. And I don't care if that's, if you're a person in long-term recovery or not. If you're not, if you don't experience any type of a substance misuse barrier or a mental health barrier, like, We're all human beings. I don't care what your sexual orientation is, your race, your ethnicity, your gender. None of that makes a difference at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. Pain and mistakes as an individual, that's every single one of us every single day. I'm a huge nerd. I love Marvel. I'm in my home office today. I have a room next door. That's my Marvel room. It's full of like $3,000 worth of Funko Pops and all sorts of memorabilia. It's ridiculous, but I love it.
That's amazing. I'm in a
Captain America chair. Do you see? Look, it's a Captain America chair.
It's amazing.
Which, by the way, so Project Rebirth is named out of Marvel because Project Rebirth is the name of the program that created Captain America, the first super soldier. That's why we're Project Rebirth. That's the story.
Oh my gosh. That makes so much sense. And now that your logo just clicked in my brain. I'm like, that's where I've seen that. That's amazing.
Well, G.I. Joe is the G.I. Joe logo. And we got good branding, I got to say.
You do. That is amazing. But
But I enjoy what I get to do every single day. You know, some days are better than others. Again, that's the human condition. But out of the Marvel thing, what I was going to tell you was, so one of my favorite characters has always been Loki, especially they've done a couple of these expanded seasons where you really see behind this, I guess, Loki's story, right? They've been incredible. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to do spoilers, but there is a part where Loki is talking to someone and he says, I know something, that is that nobody is truly good and nobody is truly bad. And that's the fact. I feel like I, at least as a child, and then in the military too, were given a set of rules and regulations. And for some reason, I mean, the military is what it is, but in my mind, it was things were black and white. And if I didn't do the right thing or the good thing, or I didn't make my parents happy or whatever it was, then I am a failure and I am bad, right? Now, again, that was reinforced in the military because in military professions, law enforcement, firefighters, if you fail, that can mean someone's life legitimately, right? So there's both real and perceived barriers, stigmas, and issues with that thing. So I also carried that out from veteran to civilian or military member to civilian as a veteran that, again, I had internalized for a long time. And it took a lot of work to come to the realization that the world is not black and white. It is 100% various shades of gray. That is all it is. And so long as I attempt to do the next right thing, I think that's the best that I can do. And if I mess up, again, I kind of rely on my 12 step stuff. I make amends. First off, I figure out what I did, make amends, and then attempt to do everything I can to not do that again, right? Plain and simple. That's with anything in my life. And that's the type of stuff that we like to talk about and teach when we're working with peers directly within Project Rebirth is to talk about those issues, most especially in a trauma-informed manner. Which helps us too, being veterans or first responders that are the peers itself. So it's usually easier for everyone to open up and discuss those types of issues and barriers that we may have acquired over the years. So yeah, I get to do some of the best work with honestly, with most of the people that we're working with are struggling the most, right? So that's where I feel like real reward. And I'm honored. That's what it is. I feel honored to be able to do the work that I do.
Yeah.
Alongside the Phoenix, by the way, Liz. Alongside the Phoenix.
I know. We're so grateful because, there's enough, back to the whole not everyone's cut out to be a peer recovery, support person. That doesn't mean, that's not a dig at anybody either. I feel like the cool thing about both our organizations is the messaging isn't so much you can or can't do this. It's let's find what works best for you. I feel like there's enough work to go around for everybody and everyone's unique talents and unique experience and unique, passions. And it needs to be all in from different angles. You know, not everyone wants to work with a peer support person. You know, like, I think it's great mm-hmm. that there are so many different, and that's, you know, when organizations come together and partner like yours does with so many, like Phoenix does with so many, that's when you're able to be like, here's a buffet, because we know that everybody is, you know, you're not all the same. So here are all the different things you can choose from. Try many, try a bunch, you know, fill your plate, because there's so many ways that you can, like, you know, choose your own adventure of healing.
You said buffet. That's my thing. Like, that's my actual, that's whenever I'm like doing peer work, which I still get to do, which is great, even though I'm national director. So I always tell my warriors, I'm like, listen, my job as a peer specialist is not to prescribe anything to you. Well, I'm not a clinician. I'm not here. Also, as an RCO, like, we can essentially deliver services indefinitely. So this is not an acute time frame. It's whatever you need, however you need it. My job is to figure out what your taste buds are like, create a buffet of options, let you pick what you want, and then I help serve it to you.
Look at that. Analogies. That's amazing. Who knew? I didn't know that. I love that. Bryce would be delighted, because we're all about the metaphors on this podcast.
Yeah, Bryce is awesome, and we miss you, Bryce.
I know. We definitely do. Yeah, Bryce and I are you know, it's so that we can continue to, like, interview as often as we want to and have as many conversations as we can. We can't always both be here, but luckily, he's in my head, and I know by every once in a while a little 90s reference that I'm in his head too. I want to get back to, you had said, you know, we'll get back to this, and I know this is part of your experience, but that correlation between, you know, like, substance use disorder, and specifically in the warrior community, and suicidality. Mm-hmm. I think we've had this conversation with every single person who's come on and talked about, you know, their experience as a veteran. Certainly some, like, you know, our justice impacted folks who have come on. And the thing that's always stood out to me is folks who come back from, like, deployment, and they're like, you know, have seen so much more death after they've been home than they did when they were out there. And I mean, obviously that's going to change versus depending on what they saw. But I know that there is just, like, funeral after funeral when folks come home, because this is just such a glaring issue. Yet, I don't know. I don't feel like it's something that's talked about nearly as much in the public as
it's. And it's not, and I don't blame anyone for that. Let me do this. If I asked you, which I am asking you, what do you think the number is, how many veterans commit suicide every day is? Do you have a number that you would want to throw at it?
1,000.
No, that's, wow. That would be crazy. But I understand. Not a bad guess. So the number that the warrior community latched onto for, like, the past decade is the number 22. You probably have seen things like 22 push-up challenge and stuff like that. Like, there's Mission 22, right? Like, there's organizations really created around that number, being that 22 veterans a day commit suicide.
Yeah, that that's hasn't nation been the actual, wide.
Yeah, nationwide every day. And it hasn't been the number for quite a while. In fact, just last week, the VA released its new suicide report. Last year, the numbers were 16.8 a day. It has gone back up again, 17.5. There was 11.6% increase in veteran suicides over the past year. That's 2022, just so you know. Obviously, not 2023. It's our report this year for last year. The thing about that report is that, you know, the VA knows it can't do everything. It can't, like, really do. It is empirical data, but if you read the report, which I don't recommend, it's like this thick. It's like an inch thick. It tells you what they don't look at. So what happened is, there is an organization known as America's Warrior Partnership, alongside Duke University and University of Alabama, who are no slouches when it comes to academia. They got together and got some funding and did a new research and used new methodology. And what they were doing was, they went initially back through, like, coroner data, medical examiner data, and they found very quickly that there were a lot of death certificates that just didn't have the veteran box checked, right? For instance, like, if someone maybe was unhoused and they passed when they were on the streets or something, that may not have gotten checked, because no one may have known it was an identification, so on and so forth. But here's the big deal about that report. What they found was, there was a high number of these veteran overdoses. So they decided, hey, let's divert a little bit and let's look into that. So there was all these veteran overdoses that were listed as accidental overdoses. And they took that money and added some more researchers and students and stuff to it. And they had to literally like do investigations like with family members and the first responders that responded to these scenes and such. And were able to determine like this was not an accidental overdose. It was actually an intentional overdose. Right. Which increased the number too. So they redid the numbers and that number came out to 44 veterans a day, which is incredibly high. Now, we can be pragmatic about it, cut it down the middle, use a median 30 to 32. That's still significantly higher than what the VA is saying and what like the typical average has been, including that 22 a day number. Also like on substance use disorder and suicidality. The PTSD rolls into that, other trauma disorders. One out of five veterans with PTSD struggle with a substance use disorder. One out of three veterans that are seeking treatment for substance use disorder have PTSD. And veterans that are living with a substance use disorder are twice as likely to die of suicide. And then you heard me also say about, you know, veterans are twice as likely to die of an overdose than the general U.S. population. So these numbers, I mean, threes and fives, one out of three, one out of five, that is an extremely high number.
Yeah.
So that's a big thing that we're working on out of Project Rebirth. You know, at the end of the day, my opinion, and obviously my opinion is the one that's influencing our policies right now, it is this. There are a lot. So there's over 50,000 registered nonprofits that say they're veteran service organizations in the U.S. Why do we see the problems that we see? It is clearly not a lack of resources. It is clearly no longer a lack of understanding and awareness. There is no way you can blame that anymore. So it has to be something else. In my opinion, and this is how Project Rebirth guides itself in working with veterans and first responders, is the problem is the soup has been watered down by too many organizations. There are too many organizations out there. Oh, yeah. Because, I mean, imagine like if you're a veteran and you tried and you search like, let's see, Veteran Treatment Center. Let's do that one, right? Mm-hmm. The community care organizations, these are like a billing system through the VA so that veterans can go to outside treatment centers for substance use disorder treatment, right? There's thousands of them, right? The accreditation that any treatment center has qualifies them automatically to be part of the community care network of VA. So that doesn't mean that that place knows how to treat veterans. Right. Mm-mm. Furthermore, just you go back to the nonprofit side. I really don't know how it happened. And I'm not saying this to like poo poo on anyone's organization, but like for some reason, the global war on terror generation like got out and was like, hey, I'm going to make a t-shirt company, a coffee company, and a nonprofit. Like, I don't know what happened there. I guess it's social media. And some of them are doing really, really well, right? And some of them are doing like really well locally. This includes the nonprofits, right? But there's a lot of them that like they started up and they look really good. Their Insta looks fire, right? They know a couple people, you know, and they got some money, but like their impact is crap. Their responsiveness is crap. They're not trained in how to do this. They're just doing things out of goodwill. Goodwill's important, right? But like hope is not a plan. That doesn't get the job done. So there's way too many of those organizations. So we are constantly vetting and verifying organizations for the quality of services, the timeliness of their care, because more than anyone else, and this is true for all of us, but more than anyone else, when a veteran or first responder asks for help, they need help now.
Yeah.
Now, because that window's the stigma gonna close. Of asking for help. Yeah. The window closes quickly. You know why it closes quickly for us? Because we're used to pain. Mentally, physically, emotionally, spiritually. That is our entire job. We're trained to, and as we say, like a common term is embrace the suck. And you do that over and over and over again. And then you couple that with, if you ask for help, now you're weak, so I can't ask for help. Right? So then when you do, you shoot onto Google and you look up some stuff and you're like, okay, well, that looks good. How many times, like, I mean, just think about it, civilians, I don't know how many times most people would call how many treatment centers before like they get in. Most people are going to call like 3 to 5 maybe, and then they'll be like, oh, it's not working, I'm done, right?
Yep.
Because the pain will subside quickly. It doesn't mean the problem solved, but the pain subsides quickly. So that golden window of opportunity closes quickly. So Project Rebirth is a very responsive organization. That is what we are, like, that's our bread and butter. We've worked with a lot of organizations to be able to make that happen quickly, because that is where we're seeing the problem overall. Otherwise, we shouldn't have the issues we have.
Yeah, that makes so much sense. Well, and not only does that window close, but also, you know, if it takes too long to get help, and I think this applies for, like you said, you know, anybody who's reaching out for help, but specifically for folks who had to break down so much to do it, like, you have a solution. Like, the substance has been your solution for so long that when you finally are, like, ready to turn away from that, that is tapping on your shoulder, you know? So if you call and there's nobody there, do you think, this is like, just, I'm just going to randomly think I have an answer, psychoanalyze the whole situation. Do you think that folks who do come back and, you know, likely, hopefully in good faith, are like, I'm going to do a, you know, my mugs, my t-shirts, my nonprofit, part of that also is a symptom of, like, the not asking for help, like thinking like, I have to do this all by myself, even if I don't have the skills.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, let's be real. One of the reasons why, like, in the recovery community, we utilize service is because it's a way for us to get out of ourselves, to get out of our head. Mm-hmm. But if it's not coupled with any other supportive type of stuff, whether that's a clinical, therapeutic, psychotherapeutic, 12-step, you know, maybe you do recovery dharma, right? Or, you know, any of those types of supports, you don't have, like, community foundational support and other types of services coupled with what you're doing, it's going to fail. Yeah. You cannot do that. One of the other problems we've seen in the veteran community specifically, and again, let me preface this because I'm going to sound critical, so I want to preface this. Like, I think that the retreats and like wellness programs will do, like you go to like a retreat, a wellness retreat for veterans or first responders for like a week, you know, a couple days, a weekend, stuff like that. Those are super important, but it has become a problem. The problem is that there are so many warriors who are going to those and they're like, oh, cool, I'm good now. And then they feel good. You get this like high, like the pink cloud, as we'll say in 12-step programs and recovery, right? Like you get on a pink cloud for a month or two, but like then it all turns to crap again. Right? Because you had no other foundational support. You don't have a battle buddy walking with you and a peer specialist and a sponsor, you know, things like that. Like you don't have that support. That's the whole problem, especially with veterans. There is not a moment of our careers that you are not trained to do anything without a battle buddy, without someone next to you or an entire type of team. So veterans get out and all of a sudden you're by yourself trying to navigate all this stuff, right? And like we kind of convince ourselves that like, well, like I asked someone for advice, so that counts. Not that it can't help. It's an important thing to ask for advice. But if you don't have someone walking a pathway with you, like that has expertise or has experience in that type of thing, you are most likely doomed to failure. And I have to say that I believe that because we have empirical data that is showing that. It's the same thing with treatment centers. Another reason why Project Rebirth exists with RCOs and why we push this is because there are amazing treatment centers that we work with, that we vetted and verified. We can actually, so anyone listening to this program right now, if you are a veteran or know a veteran that wants to go to treatment or needs to go to treatment, we can get you into treatment for free, paid by the VA without you going to the VA whatsoever. That passed as a law, this certain type of stuff I'm not going to go into because it's a very complicated process, but we are the only organization working this process in the entire United States. We get no kickbacks from treatment centers, nothing like that. Call us. We'll help you get in. We can do it same day. You can go to treatment today. We'll go to treatment right now. Let's go. Wow. We'll get that done for you. It's paid. It is amazing. But you go to a treatment center, and if these treatment centers are not connected with RCOs and like have like a really good, strong alumni program, well, again, the first thing you lose as a veteran when you get out is your camaraderie. You lost your team. Mm-hmm. Now I'm going to put you in a treatment center where you're a bunch of other veterans, peers that like are going through the same thing. You build up some camaraderie again. And then what happens? You get discharged and you go back home and you're by yourself all over again, right? Unless you connect which again, that's Project Rebirth is constantly trying to connect veterans with other veterans, first responders with other first responders, RCOs that are doing this amazing work and like are out there, boots on the ground, and you can face to face with people. Zoom and the stuff we're doing is awesome, but it is not a substitute at all. You cannot substitute like telehealth. You cannot substitute face to face interactions between human beings. It is innate in our nature. We need it. This is a tool, yeah. And I'm so glad that we have this tool. But I feel like we have all, as a country, backed away from face-to-face stuff and personal interaction in lieu of the easier, softer way of like, I could just do it online. Like, true, but it can't be the be-all, end-all of stuff, especially for veterans.
I was just going to say, especially for veterans, especially when like so much of your experience and the trauma and everything has been like, not only it's been very, very much physical and there. I just am wondering, we haven't gone a lot into your story, but I know that you have a mom in long-term recovery, as you said, and military family. I think your dad was served as well. Is that right?
No. Grandparents, no. Godparents, great grandparents, all that stuff. My dad is also a person in long-term recovery over 20 years himself.
Family and recovery. So my question is, ask me.
Liz, let me say this because I said mom and dad. So I got the thing. So if addiction is genetic, clearly recovery is genetic as well, though. I just want to make that clear.
That's incredible. I love that. And that's actually one of the things I was going to ask you. I'm wondering, when you came back, and had this experience and substance use disorder and, homelessness and things like that, like, do you think that was there hope there that wouldn't have been otherwise? Or were there tools that maybe you knew how to get that you wouldn't have because of your family? Or did that not matter because they hadn't had the same experience as you?
I get it. It's a gray area. There's small parts of that for sure. I am defiant. I'm a defiance guy. Right. The truth is, I knew solutions. I knew programs. Yeah. I knew where meetings were. Right. Like I had the tools. Yeah. It's like you get an IKEA desk, you go buy an IKEA desk and you try and put it all together by hand. Like the tool is right there. Just use the tool, bro. And what happens when you don't use the proper tools for things, right? Like it eventually falls apart. And that's what I kept happening to me over and over again, because I would make choices to try and do things another way. Like, oh, I'm going to like reinvent the wheel here and there. And the truth is sometimes that's needed. Point fact. But more often than not, there's no need to reinvent the wheel. Right. So when I kind of like gave up on that, and also most importantly, understood this one key fact, because this was the real factor that changed it for me, where I really was beginning to experience the benefits of long-term recovery. And it was that I have co-occurring issues. I have substance misuse issues and I have mental health issues, right? And my mental health issues, like I have medication, I take my medication, that's important, right? And I have to do both of those at the same time. I cannot treat one and not treat the other or switch it up back and forth. They must be treated co-occurringly at the same time every single day. They have to be incorporated together. Hands down, I have not met a person that could succeed yet that could do it one way or the other. I haven't met them. I would love to find out, again, an easier, softer way, but I haven't found it yet.
Yeah. I feel like so many of us have tried, like, anything but this. Let me fix all the other things. Let me buy a planner, don't take this from me because this is, I hear you. Well, thank 100%, you for that.
100%.
Yeah. Part of my question is even selfish, because even, as just as a civilian, I always wondered if my parents, if I had a parent who was in recovery, who maybe like had talked about it when I was growing up, would I maybe have had a different, would I have been like, oh, this is happening and I'm realizing it sooner and I'll reach for a tool. But I mean, same. Like, yeah, like I knew better. I was going to do it myself.
I knew better. I remember at 12 years old, my parents went to like an outpatient rehab. So it was like Saturday mornings, it was like family day and you go to like the groups and stuff. And I remember watching a video before they do like the breakout small groups. And the video was about genetics and like the predisposition and my mom being like, you see, you have that. And then I was like, I was 12 years old. I was open and honest about things. So I'm like interactive in the group. And I remember my mom and dad telling me that like the therapist that was facilitating that group, that she was like, wow, your son is going to do great. Like he's got a real handle on this stuff. I think about, must have been, yeah, about 10 years later, I wound up in that treatment center and she was my therapist. So I went full circle. She was like, I remember you so much. Like, and here I am. Like, you know, you know, self-knowledge avails me nothing. That's until I have like some recovery under my belt where I can actually utilize that and utilize that to help others. But I do want to make this clear to anyone listening. Like Project Rebirth is wholly in support of multiple pathways of recovery, including harm reduction, including psychedelic therapies and other types of plant medicines. You know, whatever works for someone, we're going to get them to that. You know, we have no problem working with someone and they want to keep switching stuff up. Like, no problem. We're not going to chastise you for that. My pathway is my pathway. That is not everyone's pathway. So I just want to make that very clear as well.
Thank you for that. I love that. We've been talking about that more and more on this podcast too. And that is a message that I definitely am with you 100%, like all pathways, all people. Mm-hmm. Well, as we have gotten to the end, I feel like I want to have you on again so we can dig more into more of your story. And there's things we even talked about we were going to say and we didn't even get to. So we might have to do a part two. But in the meantime, I just want to ask you the question that we love to ask people, which is if you could reach back in time and send a message to a previous version of yourself, knowing that that previous version of yourself may not have listened, but there is that person out there right now who might be on a similar path. What words might you share with former Brian Sims?
I would say recovery is worth it and we do recover. Don't give up. You know, all of us, we're every single one of us, mental health, substance misuse, both, we are survivors. Just survive one more day and you will always have a shot at recovering. So just survive another day because you can recover.
Oh, thank you. Got a little goosebump chill for that because 100%. And you're worth it. And we need you.
Yes.
I know that we've talked about where to find you. They can go to your website. They can call you. We'll put all of that in the show notes. Anything additional you want to shout out before we wrap this up?
Sure. Get on our partner space on the Phoenix app. If you have not downloaded the Phoenix app, you're wrong. Go download now.
I didn't even tell them to say that, everybody.
Because I'm going to repost this. So, I want to make sure people get on the app. Absolutely. You know, the Phoenix app's got so many awesome things. And also, I want to say, if you're on the Phoenix app and you haven't done the volunteer training, do the volunteer training and get involved. Please, we need you.
Awesome. Great shout out. Amazing. Well, Brian, I'm so grateful for you in all the ways as a person, as an executive director, as all the other things that you do and all the hats that you wear. Just so grateful to be in this work with you and also just in this conversation. So thank you.
Same. Thank you so much, Liz.
Pleasure. And to everyone listening, thank you. You heard the man. Go download that app. Hop into that Project Rebirth. Or if you have someone in your life who is a warrior, who in first responders as well. We didn't get into that a lot, but that's something that you know, I know Brian's really passionate about. So anyone that you think would benefit, please be sure that they hear this episode. They're aware of the tools that are out there. They are some really great tools. And yeah, hit that subscribe button and we will see you next time.
So now you're excited. Bryce, Liz, how do I get involved with the Phoenix? Well, my friend, it is super simple. We actually have an app. Head over to the Google Play Store or the Apple App Store, or look in the show notes of this podcast, wherever you're listening to or watching this podcast, and go download the Phoenix app.
The Phoenix app makes it so easy to find classes that are near you or to access our virtual class schedule where you can hop on from the comfort of your home. You can also join our groups and have a conversation with someone from the Phoenix community from anywhere in the world. Please make sure that you join the podcast group where you can connect with Bryce and I and other listeners. Everything that you need is in the show notes. You can also head to our website at www.thephoenix.org. And maybe while you're there, you click the volunteer tab and get even more involved.